Sifur Yetzias Mitzrayim, to describe in detail what life was like for us first in the land of Egypt and then what it was that we experienced as we were taken from the land of Egypt, is this magnificent mitzvah. It's a mitzvah HaTorah that is Magid, is an absolute mitzvah saseh min HaTorah to Doraisa, and is incumbent upon us all. And it should be fulfilled, therefore, carefully. One should say every word. One should also optimally say it, not just listen, but say it oneself. Even if the person leading the Seder is saying it out loud, all of us should say it in a whisper. And the most important parts are what we call maschil b'gnus, mesayim b'shavach. We start by describing what we suffered through. We also start by describing how there was a paucity of faith, that we were diminished spiritually from where our avos had been towering giants of the spirit. We were not. Even before that, our forebears were themselves the children of Terach. And so we have very humble beginnings from which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taken us to be his nation. What exaltation, what joy. So this is, in a nutshell, what we accomplish when we describe the Sifur Yetzias Mitzrayim Magid on the night of Pesach. Let's look at the manner in which the Rambam describes this mitzvah in Hilchos Chametz Matzah Perek Shvi. Mitzvah saseh shel Torah l'saper b'nisim v'niflos shenasu l'avoseinu b'mitzrayim. V'leil chamisha asa b'nisan. It's a mitzvah, satorah, to describe the fantastic miracles and great kindness that was shown us. We shall do this on the 15th of Nisan at night. Shenema, zachor es hayom hazeh, as Moshe told us, remember this day, asher yitzasem mimitzrayim. And then the Rambam adds, and similarly, this appears in the Medrash in Shmos Rabbah, Kimo Shenemar Zachar Es Yom HaShabbos. Fascinating. Gemara doesn't say that we have any kind of comparable mitzvot of Shabbat and Pesach, or that there is some parallelism that we have to amplify as we conduct ourselves and fulfill Magid. But the Rambam quotes this Shmos Rabbah and says that we have a Zohar Es Hayom Hazeh Asher Yetzasem Mitzrayim, remember, and that means by verbalizing that which you experienced leaving Egypt, Kimo Shenemar, just as it says similarly about what we say as we recite Kiddush every week on Shabbos, Zohar Es Yom HaShabbos. The Rambam then continues, Minayin Shebaleil Chamisha Asar. After all, the Pasuk says, Zachor Es Hayom Hazeh, remember this day, but when should we be remembering this day? Minayin Asher B'Leil Chamisha Asar, Talmud Lomar. So therefore the Torah says, V'igadet Levincha B'yom Ahu Le'mor, Bavur Zeh, Asa Hashem Li, V'tzeisim Yimitzrayim, B'shoah Sheyesh Matzah U'Morer Munachim Lefanachu. So we understand that when we have the mitzvah of Matzah and Morer, where the Torah expressly tells us that that's on the night of the 15th, here the Torah says, V'higadet Levincha, tell the story and say, Bavur Zeh, because of this matzah and this maror, and all around this matzah and maror, the Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim is to be told. That it all encompasses what the matzah and maror and their relevance are about. That all enters into the discussion. Obviously, then, this discussion is happening when the matzah and maror are there as our mitzvahs of the evening, so we now know that it's the 15th. So why to have all these psukim, to have Igarat Levincha, is because I must say it over to my son, that there's a mitzvah to say it to somebody. And if it's the case that one is alone, well, then there's Zachar Es Yom Es Hayom Asher, Zachar Es Hayom Hazeh Asher Yitzasim Mimitzrayim, we have a mitzvah to recite Magid, even if there is no son or partner, or wife, or peer, or friend to discuss it with. Even if one is all alone, without a chaver, without anyone joining you, You still have to say Magid on the night of Pesach. But we will focus now for a few moments on why the Rambam insists on quoting from that Shmos Rabbah and saying, Kimo Shenemar Zocher Es Yom HaShabbos. For what goal, with what intention does the Rambam say that there is a Zochar of Hayom Hazeh Asher Yitzasim Mitzrayim that parallels or is paralleled by the Zocher Es Yom HaShabbos? One of the obvious explanations is that in both instances we are going to celebrate the power of the Almighty. In the case of Shabbat, we're celebrating and marking the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in creation, the magnificence of Hashem as creator of heaven and earth, and His propriety of all and over all of that which He created. In the case of Yitzias Mitzrayim, we are similarly describing the strength and the power of what God wrought to the Egyptians. And it's the other side of the same coin. While in creation it's the structure of and the structures of nature, in the case of Yitzias Mitzrayim, it's the contravention of nature. For all these miracles were, in many aspects, completely the very opposite of that which God instilled in the natural world. In the case of Shabbos, Bereishis, we're talking about that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu established as the natural order. And in the case of Yitzias Mitzrayim, it's the great Gvuros of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but in a very unnatural way. Done for our sake, done for us to benefit, and just as we celebrate and thank God each and every Shabbos for His masterful creative power, so too we celebrate and detail the miraculous powers that He used, with which He engaged the Egyptians and spared us, granting us salvation using those magnificent powers of His. There's, however, another deeper understanding of this, and that is really staring us right in the face. If we just say one more word, if we just say what the Torah says after the words Zocher Es Yom HaShabbos, and that is L'Kadosho. Zocher Es Yom HaShabbat L'Kadosho. Everyone knows that Zachar and Shomer were, so to speak, given to us all at once. B'dibur echad ne'emru. Because just as there is the aspect of Shabbat, of the Shomer, where we are not going to do work, where we have physically the mitzvah of leaving the world as it is, and not engaging in changing it, and giving, therefore, ourselves physical rest. But there's also the spiritual upliftment, and there is the vayinafash, there is the blowing of the soul into our lives and into everything that surrounds us, into everything that we have created during 6 days, giving it now its holy aspect. Uvayom hashvi'i shavas vayinafash. And this idea, therefore, is what the Rambam means. As he quotes from Shmos Rabbah, he is saying and intimating that there's not just memory of what was done physically to set us free from bondage, but to give us freedom from which we will grow, expand. Freedom of our spirit, growth of the ruach and of the ruachnius of individuals and of the Jewish nation. And that Zachar Es Yom HaShabbos is therefore a guidepost, if you will, for what the goals of Pesach are all about. The goal of Pesach is to actively grow and grow that aspect of our neshamos just as we have on Shabbos the opportunity to grow with the Neshama Yisera. So too, on Pesach, we have an opportunity to grow in the Cheirus of the Ruach, for our spirits to soar and reach those high plateaus which perhaps we have not yet reached, each of us, every individual in Klal Yisrael, kifi madrega so, kifi madrega so. There's a parallel, you see, therefore, between that which comes before the Shabbos and the Shabbos, and that which came before Yitzias Mitzrayim and Yitzias Mitzrayim. And that, too, is part of what the Rambam means when he says, Kimo shenemar zocher es yom ha-Shabbos. There were 6 days of creation, and then the day of Shavas Vayinofash, the day in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu sanctified everything and gave it an aspect of Kedusha, one that we need to also impart to everything that's used in holiness, from Asiyah during 6 days to Kedusha on the seventh day. We worked in Mitzrayim. It was all about the guf. It was all about hard labor. And then our spirits were set free, not just our bodies. So the Yitzias Mitzrayim, leaving Egypt, is to Shibud Mitzrayim what Shabbos is to the 6 days of the week. Shabbos is to the 6 days of the week what Yitzias Mitzrayim was to Shibud Mitzrayim. And really, that's a duality with which we are involved throughout the night. As Rabbi Trump mentioned just a few short minutes ago, in the Charosis itself, you have these ingredients. In Matzah, we have both ingredients. It's Lechemoni, and at the same time, it's the bread that we carried out because we left in such haste that we celebrate the fact that we left, and we celebrate with that Matzah that we left with, because we left b'chipazon, not tarrying, and not leaving not one second later than HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to leave. So matzah represents both the shibud and the geula, right? So these are aspects of what the night is all about. Well, similarly, we have this shenemar, zocher es yom ha-Shabbos, because there's the shibud of the guf, but then there's the freedom that was not only of the guf, but of the spirit. And after all, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. He wanted us to come out of Mitzrayim and march to Har Sinai and Mount Torah, after all. These two aspects, the Shibud HaGuf, and then the freedom of the body. The fact that our spirits were not free, even our ability to express ourselves. Dibur was in a state of galut. We could not express ourselves. If you look, for instance, at the words that the Torah describes our pain with, it doesn't say that we cried out with words, so much as it says, Shavasam, Vatal Shavasam Elvarlikim Minu Avodah. It says, Vayitzaku, they cried out. It doesn't say that we said or expressed ourselves or articulated, so much as we grunted, so much as we wailed. But that's all because we didn't have the means to express ourselves. Certainly not as children of God. Not yet. But we will. We will. Pesach. That expression is coming. It's coming with our newfound freedom. So it's a tremendously spiritual opportunity that opens for us. And that geula is represented. And the night of Pesach has this marvelous way of telling us through Magid and through what we say in Magid that there are these two very, very distinct but equally important aspects to what we have to discuss. And the Rambam really goes right to it. Because in a few halachas he's going to describe exactly what we do. We say, Avodim hayinu l'paro b'mitzroy. We were slaves. And then, Ayotzeinu Hashem l'keinu mishom. Baruch Hu took us out. We were no longer slaves. But we also say, and we must say, Mitchila ovde avodazara hayu avoseinu. Va'achshav, kervonu, hamokoim, Lavoi Gosai. We must describe how we were people ignorant about the truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, distant from him tragically, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us. These aspects are all there. Now it's interesting to note, and people have asked over these hundreds of years since the Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah, people have asked the following question. Look at Halacha Beis. Note that in Halacha Beis the Rambam says, Mitzvah lehoidia levonim va'afilu loishav. You must discuss this with your children, even if they don't ask, even if one's child is in any Yudei Lishol. Shinemav higarat levincha. Lefidaitoi shel ben aviv melamdoi. To the extent that the child can comprehend, to that extent and with that depth, but not deeper, the father should share with his child. Ketzad im hoya kotten oitipish aimreloi b'ni. Kulonu hayinu avadim. We were all once avodim. Kimoy shif chazol. Yes, we have all around us people who work for us, people who we pay to work, or people who are somehow indentured as slaves or servants. Oh, kimoy eved zeh b'mitzrayim. That's what we were. That was our status in Egypt. U'balayla hazeh podo yisanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yotzi'enu l'chem. But if he understands more, so he starts out by saying, first, that which is most common and simple and down to earth. We were once avodim. And we do similarly the same thing. We start out, right after the Manashtana, describing the physical aspect of what was unfortunately shibud of the guf in Mitzrayim. Only later do we say the maschil b'gnus u'misayin b'shevach of the spirit in tchila odev adazor ha'yavashim. So people have asked why the Rambam in Halacha Dalet, and we have it with a bit of a shading or background to the letters. V'tzorech lahaschil b'gnusu l'sayim b'shevach. Ketzad, maschil u'masaper shebetchila hoyu avoyseinu b'meiterach u'melofonov kaifrim. We were, our ancestors, were non-believers. V'toin achar ha-hevel. People who pursued completely empty, vacuous non-truths. Rodfin achar avodas alilim. Messiah b'dasa emes shekervona amokam loy v'vdlonu ma'umos v'kervonu l'chudoy. Notice how, while in the Haggadah, we start with Avodah v'yinu l'paro b'mitzrayim, which is the Shibur Aguf, the Rambam here says, v'tzorech lahaschil b'gnusu l'sayim b'shvach keitzad maschil u'mesaper shebetchilu hoyu avyiseinu v'meiterach u'melefonav kaifrim v'toyin achar hevel. He puts the maschil b'gnusu l'sayim b'shvach of the spirit first, because that's most essential. That's what Pesach is really all about. The fact is that we will start, and in the Haggadah of the Rambam, he starts with Avodim Yivu L'Para B'Mitzrayim, which is about the physical servitude. Because that's most common. That's something that every child can comprehend. That's why earlier in Halacha Beis, he says, Mitzvah l'hadiyah l'banim. And you have to take the katan or the tipish and say it as simply as he or she might need. Kulanu hayinu avodim kimo shif chuzol, kimo evet zeh. Because that's shavel akol. Everybody can understand that. And indeed, that's why the Rambam puts it there, just as he and we start avodim yinu l'paro b'mitzrayim. But that's just the beginning. The real discussion of what's most important comes with Mitchila Ovdi Avodazar Hoyav, saying of Achshav Kervono Hamakon Lavaydasa. We were once so poor in spirit. We were once bound to our own non-belief, superstition, fear, rather than faith. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us. Now, Before I conclude, I just want to point out something fascinating, which is, if you would just turn over and look at the next side of this photocopy and see an interesting parallel of the Maskil B'Gnus and Mesayim B'Shevach of Avodah Meyinu, which is about the Guf, and Metchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah, which is about the Ruach, about the Spirit. In both instances, there is an insistence of the Baal Haggadah to make it clear that this is something that's pertinent, that's upon us, that's relevant to us, to me, tonight, on Pesach night, today, this year, Tafshin Ayin He. For in the case of Avodah Meyinu, the Baal Haggadah says, don't think that after all these hundreds or thousands of years, well, we certainly would have been freed by now, would we still really be suffering under the thumb of the Egyptians? Ve'ilu lo hotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu es avoseinu mi-Mitzrayim. We would still be an underclass. We would be in a caste system. We would be in slavery, just as we once were. Hare anu uvaneinu uvnevaneinu mushubadim ayinu lefaro b'Mitzrayim. We are as if we were set free this year. Ve'osaneu hotzi misham. We're going to say later in the Haggadah. In the Maskil B'Gnus and Mesayim B'Shvach, in the beginning we were in a poor state. Now we have been given and granted our redemption of the Spirit. We find the exact same emphasis of the fact that it is relevant now, today, Tov Shinayin He. Because it says, Mitchilo Avdei Avodah Zarah Hoyo Avoseinu, Ve'achshav Kervanu Hamokum La'avodaso. And we have now in our day, today, we've been taken by God and brought close through service of God. Today. Va'achshav, now, kervanu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has brought us close. So, in both instances, we find the Baal Haggadah saying, Maskil B'Gnus, Mesayim B'Shvach. We start with what was so terrible, what's now so good. Physical bondage, and then of the spiritual. And in both instances, the Baal Haggadah insists on explaining to us and having us explain to ourselves and to our children that it's relevant now, today, to us. That we can come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by the Avodah, in serving Him with deep intention, with a conscious awareness of who we are as we try to approach Him as we serve. Kervan HaMakom La'avodaso, Him bringing us close to the service of Him, because it is only through the service of Him that we approach Him. By the way, just as an aside, our concept of Avodah Zarah, what does Zarah mean? Zarah means strange or foreign. What does that mean, strange or foreign? So it's called Avodah Zarah because the gods are foreign to those who serve them. Elohim Acherim doesn't mean other gods. Elohim Acherim means they are other and distant from, having no relationship of any real meaning, of any consequence, with those who serve them, because they are not real. And they are of no import. They are of no consequence. Avodah Zarah means foreign to those who seek them and seek to worship them. And it's the very opposite of kervanu, close. Zarah means distant and estranged. Kervanu means because Baruch Hu takes us close. We are embraced as we serve. Kervanu hamakon la'avodasam. That is the point of Pesach. And that's what we are saying as we recite Magid. It's the Maskil B'Gnus and Mesayim B'Shvach of the Guf and of the Ruach. And what the Rambam means when he says, Kibay Shenemar Zocher Es Yom HaShabbos, is that just as in the case of Shabbos, it's not only about physically resting, but about Shabbos Vayinofash, about the spirit of Kedushas Shabbos. Vayikadesh Oysoy. So too in the case of Pesach. It's about what opportunities we have in the freedom of a spirit that can now grow, of a ruchnis that expands and and grows with that which this special Yom Tov gives us, the power of the Cheres, of Ein Lecha Ben Chorin Ela Misha Osik B'Torah, of coming close L'Avodaso. That's the Shvach of what Hashem has done for us. Kervanu Hamokom L'Avodaso.
Good evening again, everybody. It's a pleasure to be learning with you, Shusha Rab. So continue our learning. I must say I have the utmost respect for everybody in this room who's preparing for Pesach busily and have very short time to do it and are preparing for it spiritually as well as we continue learning. So it's a pleasure to continue learning with you. I'd like to jump off from the launching point of that our Talmud just started with, and that is the Rambam insists that Shabbos and Pesach are interrelated, and the vehicle of memory works in the same way. Zohar Yisrael HaShabbos acts as the vehicle of understanding what Pesach is meant to be. And the question is why? Rabbi Talabam suggested two very cogent, very fascinating, very different approaches into understanding what that Zechiras Shabbos and how that impacts the Amar Pesach. I'd like to just suggest another alternative as well and see how this impacts on our Pesach itself. You see, it really hits at the core of what memory or what history is. The way that Rashi describes this is when the Torah actually says Zachar es Yom HaShabbos LaKadshoy, remembers the Sabbath to make it holy, the Rashi explains that the way it works is the following, is that he quotes a Gemara in Beitza, referring to a dispute between Hillel and Shammai, and they were debating on the following topic. What happens if you walk into Gourmet Glatz on a Monday afternoon? And that's really early, right? So Monday afternoon you walk into Gourmet Glatz and you see a sale on this prime steak. It's unbelievable. The per pound price and the cut is unbelievable. So what do you do? So Hillel would say that what you do is you buy it immediately. And you say this is for Shabbos. And says Rashi, by doing that, by your Monday afternoon shopping spree, you have fulfilled Zachar Esom HaShabbos LaKadosh. You remember Shabbos. Why? Because Shabbos is now expressing itself on Monday. Shabbos has now overflowed into your week as it's part of your consciousness as you're walking through the rest of your week. You've now encountered Zachar Esom HaShabbos LaKadosh. That's the paradigm that Rashi sets. Now if we're to try to borrow that towards Pesach, then the application would be is that Pesach is a way of accessing a certain history which now overflows into the rest of the year. So that when I'm walking down the road in Iyar, then the notion of what Pesach means is equally part of my consciousness, that Pesach has set its mark on me in such a way that my consciousness, now my framework, is different. That would be the extrapolation. Now, let's think about this for a moment. What is the trouble with this is the following, is that history was a long time ago. I mean, what we're trying to do is essentially say that something, that Shabbos comes every 7 days. So it's a little easier to access. Exodus happened a good few thousand years ago. So we're supposed to now integrate that into the way we look, and this is our lens onto reality. How do we even access that? What's in fact the Hebrew word for history? What's the Hebrew word for history? Historia, right, which means to say, there's no word for it. Right, meaning to say, there's no real word for history in actual biblical Hebrew. Is that fascinating? There's no word for history. So we're being told over here to remember something. But isn't it interesting? The Torah talks about memory, not history. Because you see, history is a description. History is something you can leave on the shelf. The word history doesn't mean to say that there necessarily has to be a person, an engagement with it. Memory means to say it's active. The Torah asks us to engage, not to read a history book. Now let's plunge a little further into that. How to access the Zachar in a certain way? Let's think about this for a moment in the following way. There's a beautiful Sefer Bona that tells the Rosh Yeshiva called Shiurei Das Barat Blach, and he says a very fascinating thing. He says, let's say we were on the committee planning how it would be that in the future years we wanted to instill this memory in future years. How would we? We're on the planning committee and we want to set up a ritual that's going to enable us for all future generations to be able to make sure that, that Exodus is part of our our makeup and our people. So you would say maybe we'll have a festive meal. We'll have commemorations. We'll have poems. We'll have music. You can imagine the kind of events that you could talk about in the symbolisms. It seems very strange that the way that we actually do it is by, eating this leavened bread and drinking this wine and having this cement-like delicious substance. All these different things that we're doing is a very strange way of trying to talk about history. So he says that what Rav Bloch says is that on a very, very sublime and spiritual level, what the Torah is setting out for us over here is understanding that the neshama can re-access this aura through these particular, we'll call it portals of access. The way to understand this is the following. The Mechtav Eliyahu describes the way that history works. History doesn't work in a linear line, which is part of the problem of the assumption of asking the question. History doesn't operate in a line. History operates in a circle, which means to say that the year is the same circle, and we're re-accessing that again and again. I heard once Rav Zev Lev describe this. The way he described it, which is a very fascinating way of contemplating this, is that if you imagine that the year is 365 elevator shafts, you can imagine them in a cyclical area, and what happens is that every year you're on an elevated floor of that elevator shaft. So therefore, the day of creation, let's say the day of creation of humanity, which was Rosh Hashanah, so 5,000 years later, you're in the same elevator shaft, you're just one floor above it. Which means to say, when you're in that elevator shaft, there's the character of that shaft, the character of that elevator, is still with you. Right? You're still in the same place, just a little further up. What Rav Bloch is trying to say over here is that by eating matzah, by imbibing, by being part of the magid structure of the Seder, as the Torah has set it out, our neshamos are re-accessing the points of the aura of that day, because we're living that day again. Zachar means to say that we're making it real via those access points itself. Very, very fascinating, very beautiful, very, very Kabbalistic even description of integrating the Zachar, of the making it real now as opposed to simply a historical past event. Perhaps one additional way of looking at it is the following. Isn't there perhaps another way of conceptualizing this and trying to understand the relevance of it, the makeup of our consciousness that Shabbos is actually teaching us in the relation to Pesach? And it goes as follows. Rav Kook points out a very, very fascinating thought, and that is that Rav Kook has a siddur where he writes notes on the siddur, and it's called Oilas Re'iya. It's a two-volume work, and in his second volume where he talks about Pesach, he has a very interesting paragraph on Bi'ur Chametz, on what we're about to do in a week and a half, where we get rid of the rest of our chametz. And by the way, it's just a very accessible work. It's not a lot of Rav Kook's writing is long and very, very complex. These are actually much easier to access pieces. He says the following, that he asks the question, which is that the Torah talks about what real freedom is. Now, I mentioned this a little while back, but there was research done on this. There's been research by a foundation in D.C., which is called Freedom House, which talks about what makes a nation free. And they do research. They submit an annual report, and this annual report goes through every country in the world, every territory, even the disputed territories, and describes it as whether it's a free, partly free, or not free country. And, thank goodness, I think the statistics are this year. Let me just make sure I get it right. But the statistics are we have 46% of the countries this year are free, 28% partly free, and 26% not free. Okay, and unfortunately, it's been a drop since last year. We've had a very dramatic year, certainly in the Middle East region. However, what's the basis? What's the criterion of freedom according to them? The criterion of freedom is is based on civil liberties, freedom of press, independent media. There's a list of various ideas, civic and civil liberties, which make the basis of freedom. So go back a moment. So 3,300 years ago, was Israel a free nation? They walk out of Egypt. They've escaped the state of this state of constriction, their oppression. So are they now a free nation? Based on, if this organization existed then, so now we're trying to label nations now. So would Israel have actually been a free nation at that point in time? Not necessarily. Well, the Torah seems to indicate that we weren't free. The Torah seems to say that the whole point of this whole exercise was in order to serve me, meaning we're exchanging, so to speak, we're exchanging dictatorships. Right? I mean, there's a point over here is that you're moving from the Egyptian servitude to my servitude. So it's not the same kind of freedom that we're that we're used to thinking about. So how is it? How is that we're really free? Rav Kook actually goes so far as to ask the question that Rav Talabam just mentioned a moment ago in the second section, that Ein lecha ben charin ele misha oseh b'Torah. True freedom is when you're involved in Torah. This is also expressed in the notion that the writing was engraved upon the luchos. The writing of the Torah is engraved upon the luchos. Now, if you reconfigure the vowelization of that word charus, which means engraved, it can be reconfigured to word cheirus, which means freedom. Now, that doesn't sound, it is not intuitively in our minds, because if we think of the Torah as a system, the Torah is a system which limits our scope of choice. Right? We're not able to eat where we want, we're not able to engage in any relationship we want, we're not able to be where we want all the time. It limits the scope of our actions. So, but that's being told to us as being an expression of freedom. So it's a very fascinating thing that's going on over here, that we're told that our limitation is our freedom. Very, very fascinating. Not research has done this recently. Actually, I found some very fascinating research. There's a lady, Mrs. What's her first name? Dr. Iyengar, who writes a book, When Choice is Demotivating. She talks about, there's a famous experiment called the Jam Experiment. I had a friend who did a lot of work on this, and they did the following experiment. They gave a person an opportunity to taste 30 types of jam. Apple pie, spiced apple, corn cob, choke cherry, carrot cake, anything you can imagine they had. And they gave them 30 different flavors. And another group was given 6 flavors. And what they did was they did a satisfaction test afterwards. They asked, which group do you think bought more jams after the sampling of 30 or of 6? And it's fascinating that they came out with the result that the people who had the lower amount of choices were in fact the people who had a higher rating of satisfaction and also a higher buyback. This is important because this obviously affects advertising and this affects commercial selling, because now we know it's important to know what works. And they came out with a very fascinating finding that there's a certain point beyond which choice no longer helps you anymore. It doesn't actually motivate anymore. Too much choice actually paralyzes. What Rav Kook says is the following. Rav Kook says that we are a composite being. At our essence, we are a neshama. And that neshama is really an expression of God on this earth. This is our Kodesh Baruch Hu's, our Tzelem Elokim. However, above that, there are layers and layers and layers and layers of persona. There's emotional, psychological, physical makeup, which coats and clothe that neshama. Now, when a person is faced with decisions in their life, one has to sometimes analyze where those decisions are being made from. So, if a person is angered and a person lashes out, where's that action coming from? Is that an act of decision, or is that simply an emotional, visceral reaction? So, what is an expression of self is really the question at hand. If you shout out in pain when something happens to you, that's an expression of a physical, instinctual reaction to the surroundings. A person, says Rav Kook, is not really truly free unless they're able to give full expression to the innermost being. They're able to access who they truly are and give expression to that. As long as they're simply reacting to the stimuli around them, they're not free. They're dependent on the stimuli. Change the weather and you'll be talking about something else. You'll have a better day or a worse day, because that's what's really actually guiding your day. So what Rav Kook understands is the following, is that the real Bir Chametz of what Pesach is meant to be, the real actualization of what Pesach is, our Zachor, our making it real, our living it, is removing those elements of self, or being able to understand when to and not to act, when to or not to react. And what's the only way you can access that? What's the only guidebook we really have for that, essentially, is the Torah. The Torah gives us a limitation of freedom in order to be able to express ourselves truly freely. By limiting the scope of our choices, we have greater freedom because it's guided by the same guidebook which gave us the internal point, the innermost point itself. Which, by the way, is very, it may be why that the word chayrus and charus are so interlinked. Engraved and freedom. I mean, what's the connection between them besides the fact that they're the same letters? Engraving is, as opposed to writing, writing is when you take another substance and you put it onto that substance. Superficially, I take ink and I place it on paper. So now I see ink and paper together and black-white, and I see a shape, a form, which now means something, hopefully. Engraving is different. Engraving is you don't take anything from the outside. Engraving is where the substance itself, via a process, gives rise that the substance itself now shows me the truth. I'm looking at the substance itself is expressing the truth through it without anything from the outside, which is what the Torah is doing. The Torah, through the Pesach, this comes back to what Rav Talavan was saying in the second point, which is that what is going on over here is not simply the subjugation of the body, but the subjugation of the Neshama which we're walking out of, which is essentially, and this perhaps comes back to it, why it's an active, why it's not historical, why it's now, why it's achshav, is because when we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's not necessarily Eretz Mitzrayim, it's Mitzrayim. It's the personal constrictions that we all live with. Yetzias Mitzrayim is a constant process. It's a process which is therefore why the word Zachor, memory, is not necessarily about the past. Zachor is an active constant. That's where when Rashi says the reason why Zachor is related to Shabbos is why it's a Monday activity is because every present moment is with that consciousness. How is it with that consciousness? Because we still live with Mitzrayim. We still walk out of there and we're limited and we are slaves to whom? To our exterior levels of persona. To the degree that we're able to reawaken ourselves and allow ourselves access, allow ourselves expression, is the degree that we've been able to break through and become free. So these are perhaps two levels of meaning in terms of the notion that that I think could be drawn from this Rashi of how Pesach, like Shabbos, is really a part of consciousness as opposed to simply remembering a historical event 3,300 years ago. I hope that this evening has been a meaningful one. And once again, we thank those people who took the time to make their seders more meaningful through this conversation. Thank you, David. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.